This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Message of Pain, A Whisper of Hope. And the author is Gavin W. Hooks. And Gavin joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Gavin.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Well, we're going to learn quite a lot about the benefits of pain, which, of course, when we're in the midst of pain, we don't really want the pain. But there are some, as you put, the whisper of hope comes out of pain. And this is what you say about your book. This book is an insightful look into the disappointments and traumas of life, helping to clear the fog and confusion surrounding pain in life. It puts physical, psychological, and spiritual pain in its proper context from a Christian worldview. So before we get into the details, Gavin, give us a little about your background and why you wrote the book.
Well, Steve, I have lived through a family breakup myself, and I think the seeds for this material started in that trauma of life, if you want to call it that, when I was about 18. I went a lot of time, so 2 or 3 decades, without really dealing with that breakup with my family in an appropriate way, and really found and discovered the pain cycle personally. So I have a tendency to stuff things and to hide them, or to make to pretend that they are not hurt, or build a wall around it so that I can just continue to function and not really deal with the painful event. And I really went a long time without really dealing with that loss in my life. In 2004, my mother passed away, and it reopened all of that whole issue up. And the message, the material, just started emerging as I started to deal with that loss in my life the second time around. So I learned to deal with it appropriately, and have found a message for other people that I think maybe would help them heal from past pains or injuries that they may not even realize are influencing their life, their look on life, their attitude about life, and experience of life. So,
well, you say that Satan uses pain to convince us of a lie about God. Now, give us some more on that.
So whenever we believe a lie about God, we start a cycle of errors. The Bible gives us the example of the nation of Israel when they came out of Egypt and started to go into the Promised Land. They sent in the spies, and the spies came back and, of course, gave them the report of a very difficult situation ahead. And they said, God brought us out here to kill us. They believed a lie about God. That was not true. He had only their best interests at heart. But they believed that lie and subsequently started a cycle of errors. When you believe a lie about God, and everything that we believe that's untrue about God is a disbelief in the main truth about God, is that He loves us. So anytime we believe something that's not true about God, it's an assault on that truth, the one truth that basically God wants us to know and to trust and to build our lives upon, is that He loves us. Whenever we have a painful event that happens in our life, say the devil's always there to say, hey, look, this is evidence that God doesn't care about you. He's not a personal, loving God, or this wouldn't have happened to you. We have palpable evidence that the other side, the evil side of evil, will use as testimony to make us believe something that's not true about God's character, that He doesn't love us or care for us. So once we start that believing that God doesn't care about us, we abandon other advice and direction that He gives us about life, and subsequently we bring damaging things in our life that we wouldn't otherwise allow.
Well, and we all know, at least we should as Christians, that Satan is the father of all lies, so he's very good at it.
That's right. That's right. And then he makes his case very well and very timely when we have a painful event in our life.
So it's really important to understand this pain cycle. Very important.
That's right. That's right. You will spend your life in it. You have, for instance, a family breakup. I think that's one of the main targets of evil is
right.
the family, because he can really spread a lot of pain very deeply into an individual who will then pass it on to his children, and they'll pass it on to their children. So an inappropriate response would be when your family breaks up is to begin the abuse of alcohol, and you carry that into your mm-hmm. marriage, and then you hurt and do trauma to your spouse, to your children. You pass on to them an injury that they don't necessarily deserve, or and they don't necessarily understand it either. So they become confused, and they respond inappropriately to that injury by abusing others. An old axiom I've heard from several different sources is that hurting people hurt people. And I think two of the reasons for that is, one, when you're hurting, when you hurt someone else, one, they now understand how you feel, and two, the world is a little bit more just because somebody else is hurting that didn't necessarily deserve it as well. So, and you not only continue the cycle in your life, you pass it on to someone else. I think it's one of the main ways that evil spreads itself, is it an undeserved, quote-unquote, undeserved painful event in your life can be used as evidence against God and convince you to hurt other people with license. You've been hurt without really deserving it, and subsequently you have a license to hurt someone else. So.
And the success of a society is based on a moral code, of course, good. And seems like today, everything has to be politically correct. We're not dealing with the moral code anymore. We're just dealing with feeling good.
That's right. That's right. We've jettisoned our references for good and evil. And if God gave us a reference book or code book for what's good and wholesome and what's evil and what's harmful, when we abandon that, we're at the mercy of random events or our own bad choices without any guidance, morally speaking. So a society that's jettisoning its core values, as we just stated, is headed for a painful experience, a culture of pain, without moral reference. I mean, that's the main purpose. So again, that's support for the main truth that God wants us to understand, is that he loves and cares for us. He gave us rules to guide us in life and to protect us. And his love really underwrites all of those other rules and codes.
And I think we all know, even from as young as when we're children, that pain is something that we learn, don't do that if you're going to get pain. I mean, if it's, you don't put your hand in the fire when you're a kid or across the road all by yourself because there's pain there. And yet we grow up as adults, and now we're trying to make excuses for the pain or something. I don't know. It's hard to understand when we realize that pain is telling us that this is not good.
That's right. It's not a pleasant experience for a good reason. I think that's the way God designed
it. Right.
I think he ties all three of our parts of our being together with pain also. Our physical, our body, our soul, and our spirit kind of blend in this area of experience. Whenever when a parent's instructing a child and reprimands them, or gives them a swat on the bottom, traditionally that's politically incorrect now, they were associating a bad behavior or attitude with pain. It makes perfect sense that all three parts of our being connect in this experience of pain. I use in the book an example or several examples of pain, physical pains that we have that can cause us to make spiritual decisions or have spiritual thought processes. And, you know, again, this, we just spoke about this, believing a lie about God. Whenever we go through a painful experience physically, and if it lasts long enough, we'll start to ask spiritual questions. We'll start to make, you know, changes in our attitude if we're responding appropriately. And even if we're not, if we're responding inappropriately, those are spiritual and decisions in our soul that change because of pain. I think that's the way God made it. That pain, I think, is a lot like a programmer's backdoor. Programmers that make a new computer program, they'll have a backdoor that they can get into in the event that the computer malfunctions or the software malfunctions. So they can go in and have access to the system for a correction if they need to, without any, you know, without having to go through the normal security devices that are in place. So I think that's the way God designed pain. It's a way to access all three levels of our being. If we have enough, you know, if we have enough mental anguish, we'll, you know, we'll have some spiritual changes or we'll ruminate on some things spiritually. If we have enough physical or psychological pain, we'll start to change things.
And you advocate a principle that I'm sure a lot of Americans who are struggling economically because of our system now is not the moral system it used to be. And when you don't have morality, you don't have prosperity.
That's right. That's right. So we've been trying to pin a moral system on an economic plan, which is not how we became a great nation. We became a great nation because we had a moral foundation upon which to build an economic plan, a society, a culture. All those things came from a coherent moral code that we all acknowledged as a nation up into the 1950s, which we talked about earlier. But
it's really down to the basis of just being honest, right? Let's just be honest with each other.
That's right. That's right. All of the economic woes that we're experiencing right now would have been avoided had we had the moral code that we started with in place. That's right. A moral code guides us in every aspect of life, and economics, foreign policy, you know, how we treat the poor. Mm-hmm. We have a guidance from a moral system in every area of life. Every area of life and experience has and should have a moral context. And when we free ourselves from moral context, which is what we've been trying to do, we become more and more entangled or enslaved in a painful life cycle, or a lifestyle that's destructive to ourselves and those around us.
Well, I think it was John Adams who said something to that effect, that you can't have freedom. You can only have freedom with a moral people. You can't have it with an immoral people. And that's what we're seeing. It's coming to pass right before our eyes.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny that we, you know, we say we want to be free.
Yeah.
We don't even realize that freedom is a moral concept.
And it's responsibility, self-responsibility.
That's right. It can't exist without a moral context. The French Revolution gave us a good example of what freedom without a moral context.
Right. Yeah, it's
brings.
Beyond bloody, just was beyond comprehension of what they did to each other.
Yeah.
Well, just a great, great theme here, something to really challenge people's thinking and to, as you put it, the message of pain helps you find your way out and allows you to understand a friend in the cycle of self-destruction so you can be ready to help him or her out. So this is really kind of a guidebook.
Yes, it is. It's a way out personally. It's a way out for, you know, if you have a family member or friend that's in the throes of drug addiction or in a self-destructive bent from, you know, coming out of a divorce or coming out of the loss of a child or the loss of a parent. Those kind of painful events can put people in a flat spin or a nosedive in their life. you see somebody in that process, especially if you've been through it yourself, you'll see the signs and have ready answers with this book on how to turn around and avoid a terrible, terrible, destructive process that would consume your life and ruin it. So
our politicians shouldn't be telling us what we want to hear. They should be emphasizing some real absolutes, this moral codes, to help us to avoid the pain.
That's right. That's right. I love Ravi Zacharias' comments on moral absolutes. You know, you can say there are no moral absolutes. Well, you've just established one, so you just can't get away from it. When you say there are no moral absolutes, you've done exactly that. You've established one, so... So yeah, we fool ourselves when we say that there are no moral absolutes. We hinder ourselves when we don't acknowledge them and work with them. I'm sorry, I can't remember the reference. I heard it on a recent radio program on Christian radio, a lady talking about where would we be if the physicist ignored the laws of physics when they were trying to make the space shuttle.
Wow. There it is.
You can't ignore the laws. If you know the laws and you use them to advance life and society, how far can you get using those laws correctly and honoring them?
Well, there are a lot of laws that we take for granted. You know, the old law that two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time. Now, that's a law, and if you violate that law... It's a lot of pain.
It's very painful.
Very painful.
Yes.
So, well, just a pleasure to have you on the show, Gavin. Just a great book, The Message of Pain, profound. It's something that's going to hopefully help you just look at life a little different and also to see our responsibility in helping our neighbor through their pain, because if we were all helping each other, there wouldn't be as much pain, I guess.
That's right. And we have to realize that we're in this all together.
Yeah, all together.
Your neighbor can't have a different morality than you. You can't have a different morality than your neighbor. Christ gave us the two greatest commandments, love God and love others. Everything else hangs on those two. With those two at the pinnacle of what we hope for our society, it's my hope and prayer that we'll experience a national revival in my lifetime.
Gavin W. Hooks is the author of The Message of Pain, A Whisper of Hope. Gavin, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it at any of the major online stores or themessageofpain.com, westboropress.com. You can find it there. Google my name, Gavin W. Hooks, and it'll come up. Amazon and all the major book suppliers have it, so...
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, you're very welcome, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live 2-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com.
Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Coal Dust is White, a novel of ambition and greed, love and lust, power and atonement. And the author is Erwin Sagenkahn. And Erwin joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Hello, Erwin.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Just want to give everyone a little bit of a view of this book before we start talking about the details. You say it's the story of two Welsh coal mining families from 1890 to 1960 and how their lives have interlocked. You also say that you've always felt that any story should have a moral and be a satisfying learning experience without being a textbook. So you've got a lot of themes running through this book to help us deal with real-life situations.
Exactly, yeah. What had happened, let me begin to go back to the beginning, because the novel was written, the bulk of it was written 50 years ago. I began writing it in 1959. And at that point in my life, my father, I was running a family hardware store. My father had died in 1954, and in 1959 I had three children. One was 1 year old, one 3 years old, one 5 years old. And I was really struggling to make a living. And so in frustration, I began writing. Now I liked writing, and I created my alter ego, and that was George Walsh. He's the main character in the book, and he's single. I was married. He was a nice head of hair. I was losing mine. He was an extrovert. I tend to be just the opposite, and he was a womanizer, and of course I was married, so. Instead of me going around, I guess, carousing, I began writing in frustration, and it really worked. It was therapeutic for me. So I created the story, and once I created George, and he was born in 1925, I was born in 1923, I realized that I had a story to tell. So I had to create George's grandfather, who came over to the United States from Wales in 1890. And then I created another family, the Richards family, that were friends of the Walsh family. And they came over on the same boat in 1890. The Walsh family went on to Chicago, and the Richards family went to Coal City in Pennsylvania, which is my area of northeastern Pennsylvania, which is a coal mining area. And they were friends, and they communicated for a number of years. And then in 1920, they kind of go their separate ways, and they lose track of each other. And the Richards family stays in Coal City. They become very wealthy in the coal mines. And George's family is in Chicago, and they're struggling, I guess like I was struggling. And George goes on, he goes out into the world and becomes a successful salesman. In 1955, I guess, George's company transfers him to northeastern Pennsylvania. And, of course, the question is, does he meet up with the Richards family that are settled in northeast Pennsylvania? He doesn't know anything about them. And that's what the story's about, and you'd have to read the book to find out exactly what happens.
Well, his father always told him, as you put it, you don't have to marry for money, just where the money is. So, and you can fall in love with a rich girl just as easily as you can fall in love with a poor girl. So George goes after the rich girl.
Well, he did, yeah. Now, of course, when he, of course, you're giving some of the story away there, but he doesn't know, George at that point does not know that the girl he's involved with, that her father was a very close friend as children of his grandfather. And of course, you have to read the book to find out whether George finds out, or Steve, his intended father-in-law, finds out whether there is a connection. But I think the reader would have to ponder, you know, about whether or not George, when he gets involved with this entrepreneur that's in the coal mining business, whether or not that he does marry for love, or because he's in love, you know.
Well, as you pointed out earlier, you know, we're talking about having a story that has some moral value in it, and one of the things that you seem to be advocating is, what happens when we have bad stuff happen? How do we deal with it?
Well, one of the things, one of the characters in the book does have something bad happen in I'll mention her life. And the question is, what you really should do, the moral is, if something bad happens, you really have to let it go. You can't let it bother you, because otherwise it'll eat you up, you end up with ulcers, all kinds of problems. And this particular person let it get the better of her, and her whole life was ruined because she kept this hatred in her mind. So the thing is, the moral of that would be, when bad things happen, you have to let it go. You know, you just can't let it eat you up. And that, and I think that happens to all of us. You know, we run into some bad situations, and you really have to let it go by, or you have problems, you know.
And a very important aspect of life that sometimes seems like some people are struggling with these days, that you just got to work hard if you want to be successful. There's usually no way out.
Yeah, no. And this is one of the morals in the book, too, because there are two hardworking families, and because they work hard, they are successful. They end up much better off than they were at the beginning of their lives. But the key is, you have to work hard, and success will come. You know, if you don't work hard, or you're lazy, you know, some people are lucky that way, they may run into something. But you know, normally hard work will pay off, and it's recognized. I know that in our area of Pennsylvania, which is the hard coal region, there's a very good work ethic here. You know, people were born into the coal mining area, and everybody worked hard. It's a little different now because the younger generations, we don't have the coal industry anymore. But years ago, when coal was paramount in this area here, you know, everybody did work hard to make a living.
So, and of course, in the coal mines, we all know about coal mine cave-ins, and that's a part of the book to set up some of these great challenges.
Yeah, there were, you know, in our area here, which is the Wilkes-Barre Scranton area, there's always been some sort of mine caves, you know, where the plaster in your ceiling would come down, or the, you know, this settlement of the mines underneath us. We don't have that problem anymore, but it is at one time it was a serious problem.
Now, what about absolute power? We all know the saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. What about that in your book?
Well, there again, I wanted to point out that sometimes people can handle authority very well, you know, when you get into positions where you are in charge of something. And some people, when they get power, absolute power, it corrupts them, and they become a corrupt individual. And it happens where somebody in the book does get to be a powerful individual, and they do things that they shouldn't do, you know, where they're not looking out for the betterment of the community. And I know we've had that in our area where judges have been corrupt, you know. Of course, I wrote this 50 years ago, not thinking about anything that's current. But recently in our area, we've had some problems where there's been some corrupt judges and official school board people, you know, that where their authority goes to their head and they do things that they shouldn't do. And that's one of the points I was trying to make.
And, of course, given success, sometimes people are party hard, and they often get involved with alcohol and find out they can't handle it.
Yeah, well, one of the points I was trying to make, too, was that excessive indulgence in alcohol, well, really isn't the best thing for you. And one of the questions I had, do any of the people in the book have that problem? Well, one of the characters does have that problem, and I point out through some of the action that occurs that it happens to end up in a disastrous way, you know. And of course, one of the point I was trying to make was that behind that, you know, that alcohol was really the cause of his problem. And if he hadn't have had the alcoholic problem, the tragic event that happened in his life wouldn't have occurred.
Well, in your title, you talk about the subtitle about atonement. How is atonement achieved in the novel?
Well, that comes at the end of the book, and I don't want to give too much away because the atonement comes up in an unusual way. Normally, I guess when we atone for our sins, you confess either to a priest or God or something like that. But the atonement really comes up in an unusual way. And incidentally, on the book itself, the book is not a religious book. It's secular. And one of the points I made was that I deliberately put one word or number in the book that has a biblical connection. And so far, anybody that has read the book, and I've questioned them on this particular thing, did they pick up the word or number that was the biblical connection? That only appears once in the book. And so far, nobody has picked it up. And
but it's in there.
I'm sorry?
I say it's in there.
It's in there, yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had a call yesterday, believe it or not. A lady had read the book, and she called me around noon yesterday, and she said, you know, how much she enjoyed it. And I posed that question to her, and she said, I don't know what it is. So she said, would you mind telling me? Well, if you read the book, then I will tell you what the answer is.
Give you the answer, yes.
I believe it.
And another theme as we wrap up our discussion of coal dust is white, another theme is don't be too quick to be judgmental.
Well, there again, on being judgmental, that also happens in the book where one of the characters, I don't want to give too much away on that, but he does something which could have ended up tragically. And actually, he made a judgment on a situation that happened to be incorrect. In other words, he thought something was done to a certain person, and it turned out that it was just the opposite. And he did something that, I say, could have had a disastrous result. So I say the learning lesson in that is when something you see something, don't be too judgmental until you get all the facts, you know? And that's what happens sometimes. We come up with things that we shouldn't. The other thing is, you mentioned the title of the book there. That's a metaphor. Coal dust is actually black or dark gray. And the only way it could become white would be if it were purified. Of course, that's the title of the book there, where there's atonement in the book. So that's really what the title means.
We've been listening to Irwin Segakhan. Irwin, tell us how to get your book, Coal Dust is White.
Well, it's you could buy it from Abbott Press. They sell it and with Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. Now, I think it's only available on mail order, but it is on an e-book, which is very inexpensive. And you can mail order it with Amazon, which is they also have a soft cover and a hard cover. So it's available. As a matter of fact, it's available from bookstores all over the world, believe it or not. Now, they have to mail order it for you, but it's available. So if you're in Australia, you could order from your bookseller, and they would order it for you.
Well, thank you so much, Irwin, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Abbott Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ellie Loprieff. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprieff, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Lucas's Maiden Voyage, and the author, Gene Price, joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Gene.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Great. Great to have you with us, and really looking forward to talking about your book, Lucas's Maiden Voyage. Let me read what you've written about it. You say this book teaches readers how to live a life that is pleasing to Christ by condensing the commands of Christ in one easy-to-read place. Jesus commands us to walk the narrow path, and this book explains precisely, I can't emphasize that enough, precisely how to accomplish that. So Congratulations, Gene. And before we get into the details, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you wrote the book.
Steve, I was born and raised in Texas, and I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, which is the home of Texas Tech University, of which I graduated in 1963. I was in broadcasting locally, and I liked being a disc jockey. It was a fun thing to do, great way to make a buck. So I stayed with it for a while and was very blessed. The Lord gave me some very strong advice to do things while I was in radio, and I was very fortunate to jump from Lubbock, Texas to San Francisco and from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And I spent 38 years broadcasting. In 23 of those 38 years, I had a program that aired daily on Armed Forces, as it was known then. It's now American Forces Radio. And that I would say was the highlight of my career in broadcasting, was broadcasting on AFM, because it was carried by every American outlet in the entire world. And that was an experience I will always treasure to the day I die.
So your book is nonfiction, but you've kind of doing a unique, this is called A Complete Guide to Christian Faith, but tell us the format. How are you helping us better be a witness of Christ?
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about the story, if I may. Lucas, the maiden voice, is a fable. I wrote it as a fable. Animals speak and act like people. And the target audience, someone says, who are you targeting? I said, people anywhere from 9 years up to, 15, even adults. I've gotten some great feedback from adults. And I have said before, anyone who likes the Harry Potter books would like this one, but the difference between those books, in my mind, was written on a God. And it's intended for all Christians who grew up hearing about the life of Christ's ministry, and the story centers around a small crippled colt that had been bullied all of his life by two Arabian stallions who just find ways to go out of their way to make his life miserable. And the colt's name is Lucas, and the antagonist's twin brothers are Nim and Obus. And the little colt's greatest wish was just to have someone come to Jethro's stables and choose him for a ride. And since the little donkey was born with a weak back and a crippled leg that was withered, no one ever did. And then the young girl's life changes dramatically when Lucas unknowingly meets Christ and is chosen by the Messiah to be ridden on the most important journey the world will ever know. And since he's never been ridden, this becomes Lucas's maiden voyage.
And of course, we know that, which is chronicled in the scriptures with Christ when he came into Jerusalem, right? For that.
When he made the triumphal entry,
right.
Yeah, that's one.
Palm Sunday.
The four Gospels stated a little differently, but basically Christ just told two of his disciples, go to the village ahead of you, and you will find a colt there. And that has never been written. Well, see, that piqued my interest. I heard this from a minister. I was a deacon at my church for a lot of years. And this goes back to 1998. I was listening one Sunday morning, and he talked to me and said, the colt has never been ridden. And I thought, why has the colt never been ridden? And then all of a sudden, things just started to pop into place, and I started out to do a story. I felt compelled to write a story for young people that would help them understand the last days of Christ and the crucifixion. Started out with an owl called Lucas, who was the all-knowing sage of Judea, but I couldn't go anywhere with that. And then one day, the story of the donkey popped into my head. I said, okay, let's let things flow. And honestly, Steve, I felt this was dictated to me from the Lord. I really mean that. I don't mean to sound pretentious in saying that I was inspired, but I was. I really was, because this is not the kind of story I would write. My wife told me, believe me, honey, you were inspired by the Lord, because you do not write things like this. And you'd never pick a topic like this to write on, and I totally agree.
Well, you say that maybe some of you are already Christians or are brand new Christians, but like yourself, some 20 years ago, you have no idea how to present Christ effectively to others in a simplified, easy-to-understand way. So your book is going to help us do that.
See, I hope it does, because I mean, the book has been reviewed by a number of various people, and thank God, literally, and I do, that they were very kind in their assessment. One of my friends who I acknowledge in the front of the book is the Reverend Jim Lee, who is teaches at a school and is head of religious activities there. He said, you know something? I said, I wrote this with somebody who was 9 through 15. He said, I'll let my daughter, Carissa, read this. And he said, Jim, but let me tell you, she's a Christian kid. She's straightforward. She's polite. But she will be brutally honest. And Steve, having said that, I thought, oh, boy, I was very nervous. And finally, when her review came in on the book, it just absolutely thrilled me beyond words what she said. And she said, I just love the book. It tells the story of Christ without being boring. And I love the twists and turns you have in the story. And I thought, honey, you just made my day. And she did. And other reviews were similar as far as kindness to the story. So I'm hoping that people who are youngsters who want to read a book, and I put in twists and turns, and I said, please don't put it in the back first. A lot of people will go in the back and read that. I said, just read it in order the way it comes, and you'll find a lot of twists and surprises, hopefully, that would intrigue them to want to actually get to the Bible, open it up, and read more stories. Because the Bible is loaded both old and new with so many wonderful parables and stories.
Well, looking at your table of contents, it's got quite a few different themes, different principles. Is there any one that kind of jumps out at you that you'd like to start with, just kind of share a little bit?
Well, I guess in principle, the book emphasizes, Sir Lucas, that there is hope for those who are born into difficult circumstances with infirmities, and there are repeated stories of loss and then God's restoration. You know, the Lord works in circles in our lives. I believe that. And there is a continual theme in this story that nothing is impossible with God. And I'm a perfect example of that, as he has surprisingly called me to be an author. Honestly, the book reflects the undeniable power, majesty, and authority of Christ. And that's what I hope to convey in the book. And hopefully it will be absorbed that way by those who read it.
Are there some events that Lucas goes through that you could share with us to kind of give us a better understanding of just the way you're writing this story?
Well, Lucas was born with a weak back and a withered leg and was being made fun of all the time. He had no self-esteem at all, but the one thing he constantly did, he would pray every night to the Lord. And he always asked the same thing, Lord, just help me to be what you want me to be and to serve you. And said, I know that you hear a lot of prayers, and mine's not as important as the others, but I just hope that you will go ahead and help me to find what you want me to do. Unknowingly, not knowing that soon he would be chosen by the Messiah for the ride into the triumphal entry.
So when he finally realized who the Savior was, who Christ was that was riding upon him, what kind of an impact did that have on him?
Well, when he's being ridden by Christ, he could never carry anyone before because he tilted and enlisted so badly because of his withered leg. But when Christ sat on his back, he didn't even know it. He sat there, so he was being chosen, and then he despaired, says, I guess I'm too old, too crippled, and too ugly. Then he felt a tug on his neck from the reins and starts to move. And he said, I'm moving. I'm actually moving. And I don't feel anything. And finally he comes up to, well, I don't want to get with us the story, but what Christ does is he's sitting so lightly on his back, and then Lucas realizes he's being ridden for the very first time, but he doesn't know at this point that it's the Messiah. That comes later.
What kind of feedback are you getting from the young readers?
As far as I know, Steve, it's done very well. Westfold Press has a method of tracking books. And I had a book installed, a three-year-old girl by the name of Christina, who's just Christina McKillop, and just a dear. And she would call me and say, well, you made the media hit list again this week. And I didn't know what that meant. And I said, what does that mean? I said, well, you're in a select group of books that we follow and we chart and see how they're doing, which takes in outlets like TBN or Focus on the Family, any of those who would request a book to be read and review it. And I said, how many books are we talking about bringing in this media hit list? And she said, 12. I said, okay, how many out of how many? She said, 2,000.
Wow.
That just blew me away, Steve. I thought, wait a minute. And we made the hit list in our campaign for 7 consecutive weeks.
Well, that's just tremendous. Any other closing thoughts you'd like to share with us, Gene?
Steve, I just hope that somebody who has young kids, 9, 12, 15, whatever, and they're looking for a book that they feel that would help these children grow in a stronger desire to know Christ better, that they would at least go to the West Bowl website and just, I will have my own website here in about a month or so, but just go to westbowlpress.com and go and follow the links to Lucas's Maiden Voyage. It will tell you basically what the story is about. And I hope that, you know, I just someone said, how do you feel about the success? I didn't write this story for money, Steve. I just felt compelled to write it. I want this book to be enormously successful, as God would define it, not me, not as somebody saying, well, how's the boy doing? If this converts one youngster to want to go ahead and learn more about the Lord and come to Christ, then just one, the book will have been successful in my eyes, and I think in that of the Savior.
Are you going to continue to write?
Well, I'm about halfway or at least a third of the way through book 2, because without disclosing anything in the book, which would if I told you why I do this, but at the end of the story in book 1, that there's a passage and the last thing that I write at the bottom is to be continued, because I want to take this little donkey on a voyage through the New Testament and meeting a lot of the New Testament people that were contemporaries in Christ's day. And hopefully this will shed light for anyone who has a Christian leaning or wants to become a stronger Christian and starting as a youngster, just getting into the Word of the Lord.
Well, thank you so much, Gene, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. Tell us how to get your book, Lucas's Maiden Voyage.
Steve, thank you for having me on, and I wish you personally, because you seem like an awfully nice guy, and I know you love the Lord as much as I do, and we just go ahead and just follow as best we can his leading, and I hope that whatever our life ends up being, that it's serving the Lord in whatever capacity we have. And thank you again for having me on.
Well, thank you, Gene Price, the author, Lucas's Maiden Voyage. You can get it, of course, at West Bow Press, and you can go to any of the online retail stores or walk into a store off the street and ask for it, and they'll order it for you. So thanks again for being with us, Gene. And this interview has been brought to you by West Bow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.